Welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today. That would be Monday, February the 8th. I'm your reader, Ken Lauder. First, let's take a look at the weather for eastern Iowa. Today, we're expecting a little bit more snow. Winds will be from the northeast at 5 to 15 miles per hour. Cedar Rapids will see a high of 4 above 0, 5 above 0 in Iowa City, and then falling to a low tonight of 8 below in Cedar Rapids and 7 below in Iowa City, a pretty chilly evening. Sunset tonight is at 5:31 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow morning at 7:10 a.m. for a total daylight period of 10 hours and 19 minutes. Now from the front page of today's Gazette, City and County Mask Mandate Remains. This is a story by Marissa Payne of the Gazette staff and Dateline Cedar Rapids. Mayor Brad Hart said the city's mask mandate remains in effect despite Governor Kim Reynolds' move on Friday to lift restrictions to curb the spread of COVID-19. Hart told the Gazette that city, Linn County, and hospital officials will continue to communicate to the public. They believe that it is still important to keep COVID-19 mitigation measures in place despite the governor's decision to end those restrictions and its partial mask mandate starting Sunday, that would be yesterday, the day of the Super Bowl. Under Reynolds' updated public health emergency proclamation released Friday, Iowans no longer will be required to wear face coverings in public when around other people for at least 15 minutes. Businesses will not be required to limit the number of customers or keep them socially distanced. There will be no limits on the size of public gatherings. Hart signed an emergency proclamation in September requiring masks or face coverings to be worn in public weeks before cases of the novel coronavirus spiked in Iowa and surpassed 5,000 in a single day at the peak of the November surge. The plan is not to give people tickets or arrest people, Hart said. But it's just really important, and it should give businesses a little bit more of a firm stance to say, we have a city mandate. You have to wear a mask when you come in here. Iowa City is among other cities in the state that plan to continue requiring masks be worn in public. Des Moines Mayor Frank Cowney, a Democrat, announced Saturday that the city's mask mandate will remain, reported the Washington Post. He criticized Reynolds' confusing decision, saying it can't be rationalized with the number of positive cases we continue to see across the state and here in Polk County. Mayors of several Iowa cities over the summer implemented mask mandates to push back on state official stances that governments lack legal authority to issue such mandates. I'm not particularly happy with the changes that were made on a Friday afternoon, so that makes it obviously difficult, Hart said. I think a lot of our businesses are going to continue to be responsible, and they know that their patrons have adjusted to masks and distancing and all those. So I think there are a lot of businesses that would, even if we didn't have a local mask mandate, they would continue to operate under the guidelines that had been in place. Also from today's front page, Black Students Find Their Voice. This is an article by Grace King of the Gazette staff from Cedar Rapids. As a black boy growing up in public schools, John Ross, now 21, said he felt ignored. Once, as a student at Kennedy High School, he was accused of cheating on a math test by his teacher after he earned an A. School guidance counselors suggested he enroll in easier classes, even after he earned a 4.3 GPA, he said. Hungry for a different kind of learning environment, Ross enrolled in the Academy for Scholastic and Personal Success, a six-week summer program for black students in the Cedar Rapids and College Community School districts. Summers at the Academy helped Ross stand up to teachers who didn't think he could succeed and envision what kind of future he wanted for himself. It taught me to be prepared. Do more than you feel is necessary to set yourself apart, recalled Ross, who graduated from Kennedy in 2017 and now is a junior at the University of Iowa. If people expect excellence from you, you will be excellent. Dr. Ruth White founded the Academy for Scholastic and Personal Success over 30 years ago. The name, she admits, is too long, but it says exactly what the program is. The Academy provides students an education that they can't find in a public school classroom. It teaches students about Black history, literature, math, science, and a post-secondary seminar to help students prepare for college and how to be successful once they get there. White was an English teacher at Washington High School when she was asked by the principal if she would become the academic advisor to minority students. The work she did with those students showed her that a lot of students of color weren't making a connection, that if they did well in high school, they could go on to college and a career of their choosing. Today, there are 4 teachers with the Academy, all of whom are Black. 2 of the teachers are now professors in other states, Ohio and Maryland, and return to Iowa each summer to teach at the Academy, because that's how much they believe in it, White said. Black students receiving instruction from Black teachers is hugely important and hugely impactful, White said. The Academy is rigorous, and teachers expect excellence. Students can earn a high school credit each summer they complete the program, but it's not the driving force behind why students enroll. We try to build intellectual and self-confidence muscles in the same way sports teach kids weight training. It's a matter of being able to accomplish what you set your mind to, White said. At the end of the summer, they take a trip funded by the Academy. In the past, they've traveled to Washington, D.C., Atlanta, and Baltimore. In-person classes and summer trips are postponed until after the pandemic. Tuition for the Academy is $200, and there are scholarships for students who can't afford it. The Academy is largely funded through donations. The only reason we charge tuition is because students value what they pay for, White said. What we impart to students exceeds any cost. When Prairie High School senior Callie Brown, age 18, first heard about the Academy, she felt as if the school just wanted her to be in a Black program because she's Black. She went home and talked to her parents about it, who thought it would be an amazing opportunity. Ultimately, I decided to give it a shot, she said. The first few days at the Academy can be uncomfortable. Students are asked to be vulnerable, to look at the teacher and the class, and speak up when they give an answer to a question. It's a vulnerable thing for a lot of us because that's the first time someone cares if you're reading loudly or looking up when people are talking to you, Brown said. They won't let you off the hook, not in a mean way. It's, you're awesome. You can do this. Brown's enrolled in the program 3 times throughout high school and regularly recommends it to her peers. It gave her the confidence and knowledge how to respond to racist comments and stand up for herself and others. She feels a responsibility to combat racism, which at times can be burdensome, she said. A lot of the things happening today with achievement gaps between Black and white students, neighborhoods, the way Black people talk and carry themselves is carried from generation to generation, Brown said. If Black history was taught in schools, we could actually understand the root of the problem. Cameron Davis, age 17, a senior at Kennedy High School, is a whiz at math and science. Literature, however, is a different story, he said. It wasn't until he enrolled in the Academy that he felt as if he could relate to the books he was reading, all written by authors of color. One of his favorite books is The Blacker the Berry by Wallace Thurman, which addresses colorism, prejudice against people with dark skin tones. Public school arts classes neglect Black writers, and U.S. and world history classes only focus on Black history in terms of slavery, desegregation, and the civil rights movement, Cameron said. At the Academy, students celebrate the impact Black people have made throughout history, as well as systematic racism and racial injustice, Cameron said. History is written by the victors, Cameron said. You have to research fully and include all perspectives instead of just one, and you will really know what happened. White is in a constant state of frustration with inequality in schools. Naively, I thought the issues we were confronting would have resolved themselves by now, White said. Do I think the Academy will ever not be needed? Not from this vantage point. With Noreen Bush as superintendent of Cedar Rapids Schools, a position she has held for just under 2 years, White said, it's like a brand new day. The sun is shining to have a superintendent like Noreen, who does put her money where her mouth is and supports the Academy without any veiled interest or subterfuge, White said. The Academy receives $25,000 each year from the Cedar Rapids Community School District. White sees the Academy making a difference for students. Academy alumni Rama and Rafa El Sheikh, who are students at Kennedy High School, approached the Cedar Rapids School Board this past summer with several Black Lives Matter demands. The demands included teaching Black history in U.S. and world history classes beyond slavery, hiring more teachers and staff of color, and for the district to end its contract with the Cedar Rapids Police Department and remove school resource officers from buildings. In response, Bush started a Superintendent's Advisory Council to begin new anti-racism efforts and supported the creation of Black student unions at all Cedar Rapids high schools. When a child speaks, people tend to listen, White said. White is bolstered by the Cedar Rapids Community School District's response to the Black Lives Matter movement, she said. I'm watchful, she said. I know what the district has said. I see the beginning, but whether it comes to fruition, I don't know. It's not a new road for me and for many others. While Rama and Rafa El Sheikh are examples of more vocal students of the Academy, White said every student walks out of the Academy empowered and confident. There are other kids from whom you didn't hear or may have had their voices heard in a different way, who maybe didn't protest, but write, who maybe didn't write, but were active in school groups, White said. The Academy launched a new program this year at all six Cedar Rapids middle schools, the African American Awareness Program. Each group has between 6 and 10 students who meet virtually once a week after school. The students meet with a site leader and work on Black history, literature, self-confidence, and self-respect, White said. The Academy also oversees a program for elementary students at Johnson STEAM Academy and hopes to expand it to more elementary schools. Also from today's front page, early parole shocks victim's mother, a story by Trish Mahaffey of the Gazette staff from Cedar Rapids. Jenny Perez was shocked to learn the Cedar Rapids man who caused the death of her two teenage daughters and permanently injured another one because he was texting while driving was likely going to be paroled after serving only 2 years in prison. I received an email list last month, Perez of Cedar Rapids told the Gazette Thursday. I was a mess for a few days. It wasn't the first time he tried. He asked before but was denied. So I was shocked when the victim services liaison said he was having an interview with Iowa Board of Parole. The Department of Corrections recommended early parole, and she warned me there was a good chance he would get it. Perez said it was unreal last Tuesday watching the video of the parole interview of Keith Fern, age 39, a former city worker who was sentenced to 10 years in prison in 2018 for two counts of homicide by vehicle and one count of reckless driving resulting in serious injury. I didn't think he should be in prison for life or anything, but I expected it to be 4 or 5 years on a 10-year sentence for taking two lives, Perez says. My daughters are still gone, and Alicia, her daughter, now 18, who was seriously injured in the crash, still is disabled. Alicia was really upset about the parole. I was an emotional mess. Perez said her family members were at her house watching the video hearing. She said Alicia had the opportunities to speak, but she believed it didn't make an impact because Fern had no criminal record and no incidents while in prison, which helped support early release, she said. She appreciated Fern saying he was sorry during the hearing and taking responsibility for the fatal crash because he never showed any emotion during his trial, and his defense was denying he sent a text message while driving, Perez said. One board member seemed disgusted with him, Perez said, stating he wasn't a young driver at 35 when the crash happened, and she didn't understand that he didn't know any better. Fern did acknowledge he shouldn't have been on his cell, she said. Although Perez said Fern seemed more worried about himself and how his family was affected. The Gazette attempted to get details of Fern's parole, but the Iowa Board of Parole chairwoman did not respond to email requests. The Iowa Department of Corrections provided some basic information from its system, but didn't have details of the board's decision-making process, because the board is an independent agency. The department did confirm Fern received early release and was ordered to be on parole until December 8, 2022. Perez said the board also ordered conditions of release, including no contact with her family, cognitive, behavioral, and mental health evaluations, and completion of treatment programs and 100 hours of community service. The board suggested he might go out in the community and share his story and bring awareness to the fatal consequences of texting while driving, which Perez believed should be part of his rehabilitation. Trial testimony showed Fern smashed his pickup truck into the back of Perez's compact car that was stopped at the intersection of Country Home Road and North Troy on November 3, 2016. According to evidence, he was sending a one-word text message, quote, yep, end quote, as he was going 60 miles per hour at the impact and didn't brake. Perez had picked up her four daughters from school that day, and they were headed to their Marion home. Daughters Selena Apodaca, age 16, Bella Severson, age 13, sitting in the back seat, died from massive blunt force injuries. Alicia Severson, then 14, was in the front seat and suffered major brain damage and spinal cord injuries and lost mobility on the right side of her body. Perez's youngest, Mia, who was 6 at the time and also in the back seat, suffered a brain bleed and was hospitalized for a week. Perez also had 10 broken ribs, a broken shoulder bone, and a concussion. For Perez, she can't believe it's been 4 years without her girls. It's not any easier, Perez, tearing up, said this past week. In fact, the more time goes by, it's harder because you realize they've been gone for that many years. Perez was on autopilot or in a robot state for the first 2 years after their deaths. I would break down in the car, she said as her voice quivered. I think about them when I get up and go to bed. The hole in my heart cannot be filled. Perez still has no memory of the actual crash. Sometimes she wakes up in the middle of the night with a panic or an anxiety attack. One night she awoke to a huge crash. She thought it might have been a flashback. She continues to keep the ashes of Selena and Bella, who were cremated, in her home. Perez purchased burial plots for them, but she's not ready to put them in the ground. Perez instead had a bench made in the memory of the girls so their friends or family would have some place to visit them at Oak Shade Cemetery in Marion. The bench is engraved with photos of the girls. She hopes sharing her loss can help bring awareness to the texting while driving problem, which is nationwide. She joined Lindmar Community School District students in 2017 at the state capitol in Des Moines to support a law that made texting while driving a primary offense. She believes the law should be stricter and is willing to help support Iowa's hands-free bill, which would ban the use of any electronic device while driving unless in hands-free mode. The proposed bill is headed to the full Senate committee. People need to be conscious of the fact that they are driving a deadly weapon, and being distracted while driving can kill, she noted. No matter how important you think it is, it can wait, Perez stressed. Pull over. Just stop if you have to be on your phone. We've lived and drove without cell phones and survived. Some aren't surviving now. Turning to today's editorial page, we have a column by Petula Dvorak, who is a Washington Post columnist. Her piece is entitled, New Virus Curse, Vaccine Envy. We have now reached the envy stage of the pandemic. Social media posts like, I got a golden ticket to get the vaccine, first vaccine dose done, or photos of some really cool buttons, stickers, pins, and medical cards declaring the bearer vaccinated are being met with resentment. How did you get it so early? Low-key jealous, or high-key jealous. And appointed, are you part of a risk group? Hawaii, only vaccinating people over 75 right now. And that's what D.C. therapist Yuli Rios got from an Aloha State friend who wondered when she'd get a shot at the vaccine, who lives in Hawaii and is jealous of anything in D.C. Rios is a healthcare worker, part of the group getting priority in D.C. for vaccines, something she has had to explain to anyone wondering why a healthy, vivacious 36-year-old gets to move to the front of the line there. The truth is, as with many instances of envy, this strain of green-eyed monster is born of inequity. The rules on who gets vaccinated first are different in each state, with hierarchies based on profession, age, health history, or, most recently in D.C., zip code. In Kentucky, you only have to be 60 years old to get it. In Ohio, the rollout began with people 80 and older. A grocery store cashier gets to move to the front of the line in Kansas, but not New Jersey. Teachers in Arizona and Arkansas are eligible now, but not yet in South Carolina or South Dakota. That's when those I got vaccinated posts sting. So happy, yet kind of jealous, that my best friend got her first vaccine today. Diana Zimborski wrote on Twitter. Zimborski, age 57, explained her envy and frustration when we talked. We're the same age and both work for schools, but she lives in Illinois and I'm in Indiana. Ariel Serkin is a chemistry teacher in Massachusetts and is in the classroom with students 4 days a week, but she's not close to getting a vaccine. The process and tears pit people against each other, said Serkin, age 36. I don't begrudge others for getting theirs, but I'm jealous, and it's hard not to be resentful. Others don't have the same exposure, but get it before us. It's happening in marriages, too. His wife, his in-laws, everyone, and Joe Mastrangelo's Massachusetts family got the vaccine, except for him. He confessed that on the day his wife, a mental health care worker, got it, he was 90% thrilled and 10% jealous, to be honest. I'm just going to sit here twiddling my thumbs until sometime in April, said Mastrangelo, who described himself as a healthy 37-year-old with a desk job. The rest of my family all works with hospitals, with mass transit. One works in a prison. They're all higher risk than me and definitely getting the vaccine well before I am. Back in D.C., Rios has the same dynamic. My partner is 34, and he's not going to get it anytime soon, she said. He was happy for me, but then he's just wondering, when is my turn? The only constant in every state seems to be the disparate way the coronavirus has hit communities of color, and the way the vaccine is a little AWOL there. One out of every 735 Black Americans has died of COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus, while one out of every 1,030 white Americans has been killed by the disease, according to a report, The Color of Coronavirus, by data analysts at the American Public Media Research Lab. But when it comes to vaccinations, white Americans are being vaccinated three times as fast as Black Americans, according to data from the 23 states that are reporting these kinds of details. Part of that disparity is about access, both to facilities vaccinating people and because the complicated online application process locks out those who find it tougher to get on the internet. When numbers showed that in D.C., people from wealthier wards were getting vaccinated at much higher rates than those in less affluent, higher-hit parts of the Capitol, the government tried to change that by limiting some new appointments to those who live in certain zip codes. All of that can make any social media announcement about that golden ticket feel like an unnecessary gloat. But that's not why Rios posted about her vaccination. The death rates, that's something that's happening to my population, Latinos, right now, she said. And she was worried that some might not trust the vaccine. Beyond access, the historic mistrust in communities of color, thanks to the not-so-distant shame of experimentation, is helping keep people away. So Rios posted photos on Facebook of her getting the shot, her vaccination card, and her thumbs up at the clinic where she works, Mary's Center in D.C., in part to send a message that getting vaccinated is important in her community. Her employer encouraged us to get the vaccine so we can also convince more people to get it, she said. Angela Thomas got some guff from folks who envied her access after she posted the video of herself getting vaccinated. For Thomas, a 41-year-old health care executive at MedStar Health Research Institute, the guff was worth it. She said it was important for her as a Black woman to show the people that she trusts the vaccine. My social media is family, friends, people who trust me, she said. I wanted them to see me get it, to ask questions, and to know I made a decision based on science. And that piece by Petula Dvorak of the Washington Post. And we have two letters to the editor this morning. The first coming from Simon R. Sanborn of Marion. And this letter is entitled, Democrats Are Pulling Back on Promise to Americans in Need. Democrats won the White House. They won the Congress. What got them there? What was the promise? The $2,000 checks. Now it's all backtracking. Well, we meant 1,400 added to the 600. Read the fine print, blah, blah, blah. Americans are hurting. 80% of Americans believe this is important. They need relief. Do something for those you're supposed to be representing. Keep it simple. Win the midterms and another 4 years in the White House right now. There's a word that many people use along with the word Democrat, and that word is weak. You have Congress and the White House. Show some strength. Pass $2,000 checks for everyone. Be transparent and follow through with your promises and stop being shady used car salesmen. And that by Simon R. Sanborn of Marion. Our last letter comes from Susie Petra of Ames. And her letter is entitled, Big Money in Campaigns Shows Need for Reform. As an Iowan and a member of Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement, I am fed up with the obscene costs of elections and the nauseating levels of political spending. Nationally, $14 billion was spent on the 2020 elections, with $234 million going toward the Ernst Greenfield Senate race, the most expensive campaign in Iowa's history. It's no wonder that America's politics have been overwhelmingly dominated by the ultra-wealthy and well-connected. So how can you and I, ordinary people with modest means and good ideas, ever hope to run for office? Well, Finally, there is corrective action. H.R. 1, or For the People Act, is a bill introduced in Congress to strengthen voting rights, reform election laws, and fundamentally transform the way that candidates raise money. H.R. 1 addresses dark money, requiring political organizations to disclose big donors. It also establishes a 6-to-1 matching system for small dollar donations to presidential and congressional campaigns, with funds coming from a surcharge on settlements involving corporate wrongdoing. Think Wells Fargo or Purdue Pharma. Reforming money in politics amplifies support from regular people so that many more of us can run for office without chasing mega donors. Iowa's representatives should vote for H.R. 1 and that letter by Susie Petra of Ames. And you're listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Monday, February 8, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. First from Monticello, Doris Hussman, age 95, died peacefully Friday evening, February 5, at the Monticello Nursing and Rehabilitation Center following a brief illness. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. Tuesday, February 9, at the Wayne Zion Lutheran Church, with interment in the Oakwood Cemetery. Friends may call after noon at the church. From East Amana, Robert C. Hergert, age 86, died Friday, February 5, at his home after a brief illness. A private family service will be held at St. John's Lutheran Church in Homestead. The Kloster Funeral Home in Marengo is assisting the family with arrangements. From Cedar Rapids, Dolores Colton died peacefully on Saturday, February 6, at the age of 91, surrounded by her family. Dolores will be buried alongside her husband at the Cedar Memorial Cemetery in Cedar Rapids. A memorial service will be held in the spring of 2021. And from Coralville, Dr. Raymond Daniel Gill, or Doc, as he was known to many around Coralville, died on February 3 from complications of COVID-19 at the age of 95. Ray will be laid to rest with his wife in Stuart, Iowa. To share a thought or memory or condolence with his family, please visit the funeral home website at www.gayandchia.com. From Swisher, Charles Edward Collins, age 74, passed away on February 5 at the Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids. Per his wishes, he's been cremated. No services will be held at this time. Cedar Memorial is assisting with arrangements. From Marion, Gerald Dean, also known as Jerry Bixby, age 75, passed away peacefully in his home on February 5. Per his wishes, he has been cremated. A private celebration of life will be held at a later date. Cedar Memorial is assisting with arrangements. From Iowa City, Dorothy Mae Beaton, age 92, affectionately known as Dot or Dottie, passed away on Thursday, February 4, at the Briarwood Healthcare Center in Iowa City following a bout with COVID-19. A graveside service celebrating her life will be held in July at the Estes Cemetery in Easton, Maine. From Clarence, Chase Andrew Minar, age 27, passed away at his home on Thursday, February 4. A celebration of Chase's life will be held from 4 to 8 p.m. Monday, February 8, at the Loudoun Legion. From North Liberty, Rhonda R. Bernacki, age 56, died on Thursday, February 4. No public services are being planned at this time at the request of Rhonda. From Vinton, Shirley Miller, age 84, died Friday, February 5, at the University Hospitals and Clinics in Iowa City following a lingering illness. A private mass of Christian burial will be held at St. Mary Catholic Church in Vinton. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, February 10, at the Van Steen Heise Russell Funeral Home in Vinton. Interment will be in the Evergreen Cemetery in Vinton, and from Cedar Rapids, William H. Perdue, age 88, passed away peacefully on Thursday, February 4, at the Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice House in Hiawatha. A private interment will take place at Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery in Cedar Rapids. Also from Cedar Rapids, Robert, also known as Bert Baker, age 37, died on Saturday, February the 6th. A celebration of life will pay tribute to him at a later date. In other death notices today from Atkins, Betty Ann McKechnie, capital M-C, capital K-E-C-H-N-I-E, age 91, died Saturday, February 6th. The Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home in Cedar Rapids is assisting the family. From Marion, Daryl Allen Johnson, age 77, died Saturday, February 6th. The Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home in Cedar Rapids is assisting the family. From Monticello, Rose Mardorf, age 69, died Thursday, February the 4th. The Getch Funeral Home in Monticello is assisting the family. And from Solon, Mark Fuller, age 63, died Saturday, February the 6th. The Brosh Chapel and the Epicenter in Solon is assisting the family. We have no prep sports, but we articles, but we do have the events of area interest in sports today. So in boys basketball, Linmar is at Dubuque Wallert at 7:30 p.m. Marion is at Mount Vernon at 7:30 p.m. And West Branch is at Regina at 7:30 p.m. In girls basketball, Dubuque Wallert is at Linmar at 7:30. Mount Vernon is at Marion at 7:30. And Regina is at Wilton at 7:30. Dear Abby's column today is entitled, 57-year-old has love life controlled by mother. Dear Abby, my husband died 11 months ago, and I thought I was ready to date. I dated a guy I'll call Ken for 6 months, but things went south. Is it normal for a 57-year-old man to still be living with his mom? Abby, Ken's mom said bad things in front of me. She told her son that if he's going to have sex with me, he might as well live with me. We never had sex. Another time she didn't want me to wear shorts, hold Ken's hand, or even sit with him at their house. Why? Do I need help? And that's signed Youngish Widow in Illinois. And Abby responds, Dear Widow, a single man living with his mom is unusual, but not necessarily abnormal. Ken's mother's behavior, however, was not normal or acceptable. You don't need help. She does. So does Ken, who appears to be her hostage. Dear Abby, my friend and I are planning a road trip. We live in different parts of the country, so he'll be flying to my city where we will start the trip. We plan to split the costs. However, I was assuming that he would pay his own airfare, and he was assuming that we would split it like everything else. What's normal in situations like this? And that's signed Road Tripping in Iowa. Abby responds, This is something you need to discuss further. Do you consider his getting there as part of your shared vacation, or do you feel your responsibility begins when he arrives? There are no rules about this, and frankly, I think it depends upon your financial situations. And we have another article from the front page today. It's entitled, Mercy, Iowa City Implements More Staff Changes, a story by Michaela Ram of the Gazette staff. Mercy, Iowa City is implementing staff reductions, furloughs, and other policies for its employees in an effort to cope with the financial impact the hospital has faced in the midst of the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. The Iowa City-based healthcare system confirmed to the Gazette this past week it was implementing these cost-cutting measures as a result of the financial effects of the ongoing pandemic. The pandemic's financial effects have been felt across hospitals in Iowa and the entire country. Mercy, Iowa City is no exception, seeing an ongoing increase in costs and reduction in elective procedures, spokesman Aaron Scheinblum wrote in a statement, to support the future of Mercy Iowa City and support our mission to continue providing high-quality care for our community. We made the difficult decision to transition some colleagues as part of our recovery efforts from these financial challenges. The healthcare system stated it was implementing a limited reduction in staff across Mercy Iowa City Hospital as part of our cost reduction efforts. The statement did not clarify what the limited reduction in staff implied, nor did Scheinblum respond to the Gazette's follow-up questions. The Iowa City Hospital also announced leadership pay reductions, temporary furloughs, and paid time off forfeitures through June. Mercy Iowa City, an affiliate of Mercy One Health System, employs more than 900 full-time staff and nearly 200 part-time staff across its hospitals and clinics. Hospital leadership laid off 29 employees from a variety of non-specific areas of the hospital in mid-November, again, citing the revenue losses due to the pandemic. The Warren, WARN, notice of the layoffs filed with the Iowa Workforce Development was filed days before hospital officials announced to employees that they would close the hospital's inpatient mental and behavioral health unit by the end of 2020. The unlocked inpatient unit, which staffed between 10 and 12 beds over the past year, saw its last patient by November 1. Like all hospitals across the state, the pandemic has had a major impact on Mercy Iowa City's bottom line. When cases of COVID-19 first appeared in the state in March, all Iowa hospitals halted elective procedures, typically at a health system's biggest profit makers. The state's hospitals were expected to lose up to $1.26 billion through the end of June as a result of mitigation measures around the pandemic, according to a cost analysis released by the Iowa Hospital Association earlier this year. After a 395% decline in operating margins between March and April, the vast majority of Iowa's hospitals were operating in the red, according to the analysis. Mercy Iowa City sincerely appreciates the hard work and commitment from all colleagues and providers in the response of the COVID-19 pandemic and beyond, Scheinblum said in the statement. We are committed to providing the best care for our patients during such challenging times. And we are hopeful these transitions will continue to keep Mercy Iowa City strong for our community. Turning to today's community page, we have an article called Paying It Forward. Hy-Vee Cashier's Kindness is Being Rewarded in a Big Way. A story by Diana Nolan of the Gazette staff. Peter Bonabuca, Bonabucha knows how it feels to come up short at the cash register and have someone step in to make up the difference. It's happened to him. So when Sam Hames, age 33, of Cedar Rapids, came up $12 short on a day that he'd left his wallet at home and a work friend had already loaned him $100 to get groceries, Bonabucha chipped in that $12. One time I ran out of money, and I did not have enough to pay for my groceries, and somebody came out and they paid the rest of my bill, said Bonabucha, now 47, of Cedar Rapids. From that day on, I say I need to do this for somebody else. Since becoming a part-time cashier at the Oakland Road Hy-Vee in Cedar Rapids in 2017, Bonabucha has paid it forward for other people, but his kind act on January 8 came with a different kind of payback. It was 2:30 p.m., and Hames had an appointment to rush to before hosting some friends that evening. He didn't have time to go home for his wallet, get to the store, and then get back home to fix dinner before they arrived. He was prepared to deduct enough items from his grocery cart to bring his tally back to $100. When Bonabucha stepped in from behind the counter to use his own debit card to pay the difference. It wasn't a huge amount, but to me, it was the gesture more than anything. that gave me all the feels and warmed my heart, Ames said. I didn't do anything about it for a week. It was just kind of on my mind. I was going to write him a nice note and give him $50 or $100 in a letter. But he really wanted to do something bigger. So he set up a GoFundMe campaign titled The $12 Impact, hoping to raise $1,000. He also shared the story on his Facebook page. As of Friday, the total had climbed to $5,444. He was going to shut it down on January 31, but others have expressed interest in making a donation. So it will remain open for another week or so, Hames said. To let Bonabucha know of his plans, Hames arranged to surprise him at the store at 9 a.m. January 27 by presenting him with an oversized mock-up check for $3,000. Bonabucha will receive the real funds after the account is closed. Bonabucha definitely was surprised and didn't even remember helping Hames out of a bind a month earlier. And that didn't surprise Hames, since he said their previous interaction only took 3 or 4 minutes. To him, it was just something that he's done in the past and continues to do if he's able, Hames said. To me, it was so heartwarming, and I felt the need to do something bigger for him. He also knew Bonabucha has been a refugee from Africa and probably has had some hurdles in his life to get here and get where he is. So it was even that much better when I found out that there couldn't be a more deserving guy, Hames said. I've seen other people talk about how he's always joyful and cheerful and all the things that I witnessed when I was checking out in his line. Bonabucha fled his homeland of Burundi in 2007 when war broke out. He had been raised and educated there, but he knew he would need to further his education in the United States. 2 years later, he became a U.S. citizen at age 35 and lived first in Omaha, noting that things did not go well for him there. Seeking opportunities, promising educational opportunities in Iowa, he came to Cedar Rapids and took general science courses at Kirkwood Community College and then transferred to Mount Mercy University to finish his degree, studying nursing healthcare administration and healthcare navigation. Needing a job, he turned to Hy-Vee, where he's happy to help his customers. I've always said we have great customers, and Sam shows that in his gratitude to Peter, said Kay Kress, store director at the Oakland Road Hy-Vee. It's nice to see people still helping people and paying it back tenfold. It just warms my heart. More than anything, I just wanted people to know the kindness Peter showed to me, Hames said. I felt the need to pay it forward. The best part about it, to me, was I didn't know anything about his background. He didn't know anything about my background. It was just people helping people. In today's world, there's not as much of that going on, and I think it was a nice gesture from him. The lasting impact on me is something I'll remember forever. During the presentation ceremony, Bonabucha said, I just did what I thought I was to do here, because Hy-Vee's mission is to make the customers be happy. He doesn't know yet what he'll do with his windfall, but he's already reaped a valuable reward. Sam came up and say I touched his heart, and Bonabucha told the Gazette, it means a lot. I'm glad that I made a friend. And the at-a-glance sidebar to this article is called The $12 Impact Campaign to Reward Hy-Vee Cashier Peter Bonabucha of Cedar Rapids for His Kindness. The details are at gofundme.com/F/the-12-impact. Turning to a couple of Eastern Iowa briefs. The first one comes from Eastern Iowa and is entitled Free Tax Preparation Available for Individuals and Families Who Qualify. As Eastern Iowa continues to battle COVID-19, the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program is preparing to assist individuals and families safely amid ongoing changes due to the pandemic. VITA, a national IRS-sponsored program coordinated by United Way of East Central Iowa, provides free preparation and filing of federal and state tax returns for families and individuals with a household income of less than $54,000. IRS-certified volunteers provide free tax preparation, often determining eligibility for tax credits that can help save families money. Because of the pandemic, the IRS has delayed the start of tax filing season until Friday. This means VITA's start date will be delayed until the week of February 15. Along with a delayed start date, VITA will be implementing other changes this year. In Linn County, VITA will conduct only intake appointments where individuals can drop off their tax documents and pick them up in 2 to 3 weeks. There will be no sit-down appointments. Jones County will be accepting a limited number of in-person appointments. Everyone who wishes to get their taxes done will need to schedule an appointment. Walk-ins will not be accepted this year. Masks are required for all clients and volunteers. There will be 3 sites in Linn County and 1 site in Jones County for VITA appointments. The first is at Horizons, a family service alliance at 819 5th Street Southeast in Cedar Rapids. Next, at Ladd Library, 3750 Williams Boulevard Southwest in Cedar Rapids. And at Thomas Park Safe Room at 343 Marion Boulevard in Marion. And the Jones County Volunteer Center at 105 Broadway Place, Suite 1 in Anamosa. Clients should visit uweci.org/VITA2021 to schedule a free tax appointment online. Those who do not have internet access may call 319-382-5685. That's 319-382-5685 for Linn County appointments. Or in Jones County appointments, it's 319-560-0811. 319-560-0811. Individuals are asked to remain patient as wait times may be long. All appointment scheduling opens this week. For questions or more information on the VITA program, contact Meredith Hirschner at meredith.hirschner@uweci.org or call 319-398-5372, extension 824. And from Linn County, Preservation Commission's grant application window is now open. The Linn County Historic Preservation Commission is now accepting grant applications from nonprofit organizations for its annual Historic Preservation Grant Program. Application information is available on Linn County's website at linncounty.org/historic-preservation-grant-program. There is $28,800 in grant funding available this year. The format of the application has changed to an online submittal this year. On March 6, the Historic Preservation Commission will host its annual grant workshop for those interested in learning about the preservation grant process or who have questions about their project. The workshop is being held via a virtual go-to meeting this year. If you are interested in joining the virtual meeting or have questions or concerns about the new application format, contact the Planning and Development Department at 319-892-5130. Applicants must be a nonprofit organization located in Linn County. Completed applications are due by 5 p.m. April 1. This is a competitive grant program. Projects must be designed for the purpose of collecting or preserving historical materials, artifacts, places, or structures including National Register of Historic Places nominations, maintaining an historical library or collection, conducting historical studies or research, issuing educational publications, not membership newsletters, providing public lectures of historical interest, or otherwise disseminating a knowledge of the history of the area to the general public. And from Center Junction, enjoy winter and help count birds this Friday and Saturday at Central Park. Need to get out of the house? Looking for a fun weekend activity with the kids? Mark your calendar and bring the whole family to the Central Park Nature Center Winter Open House and Great Backyard Bird Count on Friday or Saturday. Time slots will be available each day for families to learn about the Great Backyard Bird Count, make a suet log bird feeder, and pine cone bird feeders to take home, and view Nature Center exhibits and live animals. Daily time slots are available for reservation, include 10 to 11:15 a.m., 11:30 to a.m. to 12:45 p.m., and 1 to 2:15 p.m., and 2:30 to 3:45 p.m. Families wishing to try out snowshoeing can also reserve snowshoes for use during available time slots on both days. Due to COVID-19 protocols, each time slot is limited to one family group, and high-touch areas will be sanitized between time slots. Face masks are requested when inside the Nature Center. To reserve your Nature Center or snowshoeing time slot, text 319-481-7987 or email naturalist@jonescountyiowa.gov by 4 p.m. on Thursday. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Monday, February 8. I'm your reader, Ken Lauder. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thank you for listening.